it's a representation of who I am, and I couldn't be happier sitting out front and watching the happiness of others, and I get real kicks out of that. And I enjoy being at work. It's not just a business for me. It's, you know, it's also my lifestyle. So it's easy, you know, people look at it, you look like a workaholic or married to your work, but for me, it's, I just love it. I really do love it.
This is the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. Many episodes ago, Neil Perry spoke of the three factors in the success of a restaurant: location, location, location. But finding one can be a challenge. But patience has its rewards. What impact does landing your dream location have on the business and the confidence of what you're offering? Chloe Watts is the owner of Tart Bakery and Cafe in Burleigh Heads, Queensland. Chloe, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. You spent a long time waiting for the location that you currently have. What sort of time frame are we talking about, and what made that space so important to you?
Look, I've been looking at this site for, 5 to 7 years, I'd say. It was always such, I don't want to be disrespectful to the previous owner, but Wasted Potential being a beautiful leafy corner on one of the best suburbs, in my opinion, of the Gold Coast. And, you know, they had an Italian restaurant here for, I think it ended up being about 30 years. And they only did the night trade, which was beautiful in its own stead. But I think living on the Gold Coast, there's one thing that rings true, and that is what we are very much day people, and we love to be in bed early. And, you know, it's a very sunny corner with enough tree coverage to escape that if that's what you're after. So I saw lots of potential. Plus, a corner site is always a little bit special, in my opinion, no matter where you are.
Tell us a bit about the building. What's so important about its history and place in the community?
Look, it's been here for so long. I mean, even just naming that Italian restaurant that was here for 30 years, everyone on the Gold Coast knew of Vecchia Roma. And it was, you know, always remained the same. I think the first 10, 15 years, they were a bit of an icon, and then it started to just be, you know, the food scene started to definitely pick up on the Gold Coast. But it was the red brick wallpaper and the bright red paint and, you know, the checkered tablecloths, but it had a lot of substance, and a lot of older generations here adored it. But Burleigh Heads is massive. You know, I grew up around the corner, and even though I left for many years, it's always a place that, you know, you feel at home, and it's a much better representation of the Gold Coast than Surfers Paradise or Broadbeach is. So, you know, it means a lot for me to be in this position and this site, and feels very local to me.
Well, take us back to when you first got it. What was it like when you finally got the location and started stripping everything back to create your dream?
Look, it was dirty. It was, I think you could argue Gordon Ramsay would have had a field day in the kitchen. But it was actually a lot of fun, and I wouldn't change it for anything, because I'm someone who really appreciates a spotless environment. And I think a clean kitchen says a lot about the success of the kitchen. And it was kind of great to be able to showcase the difference between what it was and what it is now. The format was great. You know, the layout was, the bones were there. My fiance and I spent many a days and nights ripping out the carpet and bringing down walls and having a lot of fun with the sledgehammer. I'm 7 months pregnant now, so that I'm glad it happened when it did. But it was, look, it was an interesting site to deal with, but it was, from a very early on, I knew exactly the vision that I wanted in there, and stripping it down was just all part of the excitement.
Well, I'd love to take a deep dive into your vision and what you're doing there shortly, but take us back to when you were young. What sort of role did food play for you and your family?
Look, it's funny because we don't come from a heavy background of food. You know, mum and dad didn't have the deli on the corner that I worked at as a child or anything like that. But mum's always had a really intense passion for food and ironically, particularly Asian food. And so instead of growing up on bangers and mash, we grew up on sang choi bao and you
Wow.
know, yeah, and dumplings made from scratch and stuff like that. So I think particularly for my eldest brother and I, that really ingrained in us this desire and love for food that never went away. And you know, I grew up, my friends have always laughed at me because when I go to a restaurant, I never order one main or one entree. I over order wherever I go because I want to taste everything. And it's a, you know, it's a funny topic my fiance loves to bring up now because it costs us a lot more to go to dinner because I'm so intrigued by flavors. And you know, I've fortunately when I moved to Sydney, I met a good friend, Aaron Teese, who has had a lot to do with the catering scene in Sydney, and you know, I got to do lots of things with him and cook with him. And one thing he said to me early on, before I was confident about this career path, was that he's never seen someone outside of food understand flavors so well. And I mean, I just held on to that statement, and that was what, 13 years ago he said that. And and it's really kind of carried with me that, you know, I have confidence in my ability to understand food and flavors. So, yeah, so it's funny. We didn't, you know, it didn't have the butcher or anything like that in those stories. But food has always definitely been a big part of my family's life and mum's passion and, you know, bringing us all together, which I'm sure is a common theme for a lot of your guests.
When did you first realize that, you know, a career in food was for you? What was the light bulb moment? And can you take us back to when you first worked in a commercial kitchen and what it was like?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's funny because I actually studied media communications journalism when I moved to Sydney, and it was just nothing. It was ticking no boxes, stimulating no part of me, and I knew something was askew, and I always had those dreams to get into the food industry. And, you know, mum and dad are from a manufacturing background. So they had an UGG boot manufacturing business, and, you know, they sought my help in Sydney to open up a store. So I kind of went down that path. Meanwhile, you know, jumping on with Aaron and Studio Neon at the time and getting involved there and doing really fun dinners. And it wasn't really until mum and dad sold the business and I continued on with a new owner that I knew I was not following my heart. And so I packed up everything and moved over to London and did 6 months of food recs and travel to literally just get more ideas and more understanding. And that's when it was really funny that I was ordering lots of dishes because I think I was solo that whole time. And I remember sitting, you know, at the front of, you know, the waterways in Positano or something like that. And it looked like I was on my last legs because I'd have three mains on my own. Oh, this girl just wants to enjoy the last minutes of life. So yeah, it was really fun. And I actually learned so much in that time. And then when I moved to London properly, I was so lucky to meet a guy named Blo Diady, who did some incredible private functions for some very well-known and established people. And he took me under his wing and taught me so much. So ironically, I wasn't actually ever in the commercial kitchen side of things. It was more that style that I was learning. And one of the best experiences of that was that we cooked for 2 weeks for John Taylor, who's one of the main guys in Duran Duran, and his wife, Gila, who's started Juicy Couture. And they had this ridiculous 50-room manor in the countryside of England. And it was just so surreal when we pulled up. You know, there's 8 peacocks running around, 2 of which were albino. You know, I walked in and there's King George III's chair sitting in this giant hall, and she pointed out the curtains in one of the spare bathrooms that no one ever walks in, and it was, you know, Queen Elizabeth I's friggin' scarf turned into curtains. And it's like, just like the most ludicrous, like you can imagine, an over the top setting. And I remember that first night, Blo looked at me and he said, "These are Napoleon's dining plates, be really careful. And I said, sorry, Napoleon's dining plates. And he said, all the museums wanted it, but she kept her hand up in the auction and won them. So there they are, just, you know, eating their perfectly cooked steak off Napoleon's dining plates. So it was stuff like that that was just like so incredible. So we stayed there breakfast, lunch and dinner for 2 weeks, cooked them, you know, Christmas and huge feast. And it was just incredible. It was a really surreal experience, and it only solidified my admiration for the industry and passion for it, for sure.
That's a crazy environment in which to cook in for a fortnight. What sort of food were you cooking?
It certainly wasn't a tart style for a setting like that. I mean, obviously we did do the breakfast, but English are a little different with their breakfast desires. We were doing beautiful crab with nam jim and, handmade breads, and I mean, which obviously ties into tart, but all sorts of different things, and everything was fresh, and it was really Blow's direction on where he wanted to go, but it was just a wonderful experience. And they are honestly two of the kindest, most down-to-earth people living in this ridiculous environment, this ridiculous world, and it was a really cool experience.
You spent a lot of time in London. What were some of the real key moments that gave you the confidence to come home and do what you do now?
I wanted to explore a few facets of hospitality. So I worked for a really great lady called Sally Clark, who had a Michelin restaurant over there, as well as she was one of the first to really jump on that high-level production of bakery. And she was serving, you know, she had her own deli bakery across the road from the restaurant. And then she also had a production kitchen where she did a lot of stuff for, you know, Eurostar and British Airways and stuff, and commercialized that side of thing a little bit, you know, quite a bit. But at the same time, she really kept her integrity in her own bakery and deli of being more homemade and a little less mass produced. So it was really cool to see the two different sides to that. And I worked in all facets. I was really honest with her and said, you know, this is my career path. I want to go home and open something of my own. And I'd love if you could help me. And I was really lucky to have that introduction from a friend. And she was great. I mean, she is a hard ass, but she is excellent. She is exactly what you would assume an involved owner of a Michelin restaurant and a huge empire like that to be. And so I worked for £7 an hour, running extremely hot dishes up a huge flight of stairs, where the chef would not let you, the head chef would not let you use anything to keep the burn away from your hands. So you just had to suck it up. I remember having to stop halfway up the stairs one day, and he said, "Don't you dare put that plate down." And I said, "Yes, chef," and kept walking while my fingers were searing. And then in the next breath, next day we would, I'd be in the bakery or the production kitchen or the deli, and just really, like, she had some incredible ideas and really honed in on that environment. And she killed it. She's a massive inspiration in terms of the growth you can have in your business and where you can take it. It's not as simplified as just, you know, having a cafe or bakery. You can take it so much further.
After going to Sydney and London, what brought you back to where you grew up?
It's a funny one, that one. I mean, I actually had quite a bad accident about 6 years ago in Peru, and I was quite badly injured, and it took me 3.5 days to get to a hospital. And so with that came, unfortunately, a lot of baggage in terms of pain and sort of PTSD from the stuff that occurred to get off the mountain. There was unfortunately no help there, and I had to walk on my own 2 feet with significant injuries. So that kind of, you know, I did my 2 years over in London, and it was just becoming a little bit difficult to be that far from your support group, and I'm just trying to be as candid as possible, but it definitely impacted my experience to stay longer. And I also knew that you know, it was time and I was definitely ready. I was in the right headspace to come back and start putting those feelers out for the right location. And everything kind of fell into place. I had every intention of going back to Sydney and I was, you know, looking for the right sites and something a bit more special. And then I happened to meet my fiance and it felt right. And I decided I just kind of went with my heart and that was to be on the Gold Coast and see things play out. And I hadn't been there for 8 years and it was a different world. I mean, you could actually find restaurants with great food and great wine and like, you know, cafes that you actually wanted to sit at for longer than 20 minutes. And it was a really cool feeling because when I had left, none of that existed. And well, certainly to not to the extent it is now. And that was a huge part of my life in Sydney and in London. So it was quite a cool experience to come back and be like, actually, this is a nice place to live. This has got a lot to offer. And then to meet Chris, it was it all came together really beautifully.
You mentioned that you were eyeing off the location for Tarte for 6 or 7 years. What were you doing on the Gold Coast prior to that in the lead up to getting the site?
So it was a funny one, actually. I mean, I got a job as soon as I got back to just, you know, I don't want to say full time because it was a great job and a great business, but just while I kind of worked out exactly the business plan and model moving forward and then was approached to purchase Paddock Bakery, which is obviously another great cafe on the Gold Coast. And it just kind of came at the most perfect time. And it was a project I'd worked with mum and dad for many years already in their manufacturing business. And it was a project that they could, you know, get involved in and have a feel of the hospitality industry and enjoy as well. So I actually did that with them for a little while with the intent to expand and sell, knowing that it was never my cafe from the get-go, that the foundations weren't laid by me. I knew that it was going to be a relatively short-term thing. So the intent for all of us was to expand. And we did that in 2.5 years and added, you know, lots of facets to the business and doubled the seating capacity and production and stuff like that. So got to where we wanted. And I'm so grateful for that experience because it really set me up for Tarte to be what it is today and gave me so many lessons. And it was great working alongside my parents, you know, incredible business people. So while I have, you know, the acclimate for food and everything, learning from them on the business side of thing was just invaluable and has really shaped the way I run Tarte. And yeah, I'm super grateful for that experience. And obviously Paddock's an incredible cafe and it was a great creative outlet for me to do a lot of fun pastries and cakes and get a lot of media attention and videos done. And obviously I've got a background of marketing. So that side of thing is really fun for me to explore. And then was really happy to sell when we got approached. We didn't have it on the market and it was really good timing. And it was just before COVID actually, which I'm very lucky and grateful for. And gave me a bit of time off because I was working like a dog and pushing myself as far as I possibly could. And it was really good timing to take that break, take a breath and reset and just wait for this site to become available really. And the previous owner was a really lovely, lovely guy and it worked out really well that he was ready to, you know, get out of the industry and didn't have the passion for it that he needed. And I'm really grateful because I know it sounds silly, but everything was just very meant to be. And yeah, it's really all fallen into place how I believe it's meant to.
Well, tell us about the inspiration behind Tarte and the creative process when you were building the idea of what it would be. Where did you source inspiration from?
Look, there's so many places that all overseas that, you know, I've seen and taken great inspiration from, and that's everywhere from, you know, New York to London to Paris and other parts of the States that, you know, their level of design and the way they do things, you know, prime example, the way, you know, the Parisians love to sit outside and just, you know, face the world rather than face each other. And that I've kind of adopted that concept with our seating out front. You know, the our lights are from mid-century Amsterdam that we've gotten there, and you know, our countertop is 100-year-old from a movie theater in New South Wales. So I you see a lot of that in Europe particularly, and some aspects in the States, where it's that blending of really, you know, modernized concepts with a lot of history. And you know, you'll look around Tartt and there's, you know, a 150-year-old coffee grinder on display, but it's kind of behind the bread, but it's there, you know what I mean? And it's stuff like that that I just wanted to make sure that I paid homage to. And, you know, the frontage was definitely inspired by that West Village, Greenwich, Soho element of New York. I've spent a lot of time in New York, and it has a huge part of my heart. So I really was adamant that I wanted to include that in the design. And for me, my favorite parts of New York are that downtown Soho West Village style. And so I was adamant I wanted to get all of that custom designed to be as fitting and as in my vision as possible, to honor that time I've spent there. And that was a massive part of my inspiration for doing the cafe bakery. Although New York, you know, if it wasn't for Australians, that scene is not strong on the breakfast front, but everything else is incredible. And just their level of design and their thought process is great. So, I mean, my fiance and I quickly dashed there in December, thankfully, looking back now, not knowing that COVID was going to shut us out for a long time. But I remember we were on the ground for, I think, 5 days, and, it was just game on. I mean, I had like my poor partner dragging him around for 8 hours a day, 9 hours a day. And we would, you know, look at all of the, obviously the design wise, the frontage and everything, but food wise, I'd have like anywhere from 6 to 8 different establishments lined up. And he's not someone who can just take a bite and put away. So he was rolling around by the end of the day with a stomach ache. So, It was a really cool experience, though, to share that with him and where my inspiration has come from for a lot of the look of Tartt. And then, you know, Paris is such an incredible place in the world, so that played a huge part as well. You know, the tiles are very reminiscent of Paris, and the front style of seating and the display of pastries. You know, they want it out there in full force, so you can capture exactly what they're making. And I wanted to make sure that was a huge element, and it takes up, I think it's a 2.2 meter display cabinet with just a piece of glass, and the pastries doing their thing behind it and showcasing themselves rather than all lined up in a row. So yeah, it's definitely, the design has come from my travels without a doubt. And there's some really great places out there that have given me a lot to kind of start on and then develop.
You mentioned how much the area had changed in regards to food since you'd been away and returned. But were you nervous about delivering something so new and at the standard that you have before opening?
No, I think thanks to Paddock, I was very lucky to have that behind me, because obviously it's a very recognizable destination on the Gold Coast. And I think a lot of people were quite excited to see what I would do next, which is a very, you know, lucky position to be in. And if one thing I'm very confident about, it's the food that we deliver and I deliver. And I'd worked, you know, 6 to 9 months on our menu and our pastries. And I have an excellent head pastry chef that could bring a lot of it to life. And I've known him, you know, for a few years and have a lot of trust in him as well. So, and then food menu, Aaron jumped on board at the start with me and really helped to curate the menu. And basically it's a really nice feeling when you're not a trained chef to have someone that can pull what's in your head and put it on a plate. And so I was really lucky to get that. And so I was confident from the get-go that it was going to work. And I mean, Gold Coast has got an excellent breakfast brunch scene, and, you know, really good bakeries as well. So it's, it, forever keeps you on your toes. And I would much rather throw out a tray of crullers than serve something that I'm not 100% confident in. And I think that makes a lot of the difference between, you know, places like Tarte and the smaller guys, because I think it makes all the difference just having that confidence in your quality and running with it.
Tell us a little bit about your food. What's a dish or two that you can tell us about that really exemplifies sort of where your cooking is at and the offering there?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think first off, I'll say that fundamentally I wanted to do a menu that, I mean, we are on the Gold Coast still, and I wanted to do a menu that's dishes that are recognisable to our customer base, but that have a little more thought put into them and are taken just a little bit further without being scary, if you like. You know, Sydney and Melbourne, you have that opportunity to push the barriers a lot more, whereas Gold Coast, I think you still need to have that offering of scrambled eggs and simplified dishes. But, you know, instead of just doing scrambled eggs, I wanted to make sure that they were scrambled eggs that you would die over and come back again and again and again and know that you couldn't make it home. And so, you know, we incorporated miso into them, creme fraiche, cream. We got the togarashi, parmesan, chives on top. And, you know, fortunately, you know, a lot of people do come back and back and back for them. And it's probably been the hardest dish I've had to avoid, because I refuse to have them well done during pregnancy. But, you know, it's stuff like that on the simple side of the menu that I just wanted to make sure we tick a brief more than just scrambled eggs. And, you know, our bagels, obviously, again, coming back to that New York inspiration, New York style bagel is really important to me to have perfect. And we have a section on our menu that specializes in those bagels. And they're made every single day. They've got the everything seasoning, which some people know about, some people don't, but obviously is a huge New York style of bagel with the everything seasoning. And, you know, they're beautiful, and customers don't understand why they can't just put a butter knife through it. And it's then that explanation that, you know, it's boiled and baked, and it's a longer process. And they're designed to be that way, that you rip into them with your teeth. And that's the true enjoyment of a good bagel, in my opinion. And then we've got, you know, pastry side of things. The cruller absolutely was inspired by a place in New York that we was on our list on one of those days, and we hadn't seen in Australia yet, and we hadn't really, you know, Loon hadn't launched their side business of that, and it was really cool to kind of get ahead of it and get it on a menu and make it a specialty. And it's been incredibly received. Actually, it's the new donut, if you like, and it's something that we worked really hard on to get the perfect recipe for. And so I wanted to go old school French again, but recognizable. So, you know, stuff like your cannelés and crullers haven't been seen for a while, but they're so freaking delicious. And they were lost a little bit. And, you know, we wanted to kind of bring that back and really hone in on a familiar side of those items, but still pushing the barriers just a little bit.
Now that you've created your dream venue, what is it that you love about what you do?
It's funny you ask that, because I'm still doing 6 days a week here, 7 months pregnant, and people keep telling me I'm friggin' nuts and to go home. But I just, like, I adore every single element of it. I'm very lucky to have a really beautiful team. You know, we've got over 40 employees, and they're just wonderful people. And, you know, so that in the first place is just so nice, coming to an environment that you actually really like everyone, and it's a really happy space. And second to that, I mean, when you create something from, I mean, for example, my partner and I were on our knees digging out the white tiles to put black tiles in for 3 days straight. And when you literally have blood, sweat and tears into the foundations of the place, there's a very intimate love you feel with it. And, you know, I often sit back and say, gosh, you know, it's so me. It's I'm so happy with it. And we eat here. If I'm at home on that seventh day, I still get Chris to bring me home tart. So that says a lot, I think, about our enjoyment of our food. So yeah, I mean, honestly, the easiest answer for that is everything. Like, I just, it's a representation of who I am, and I couldn't be happier sitting out front and watching the happiness of others. And I get real kicks out of that. And I enjoy being at work. It's not just a business for me. It's, you know, it's also my lifestyle. So it's easy. You know, people look at it, you look like a workaholic or married to your work. But for me, it's, I just love it. I really do love it.
Apart from a new baby, what do you think the future holds in a food sense for you?
Look, I think definitely Tarte has further to go and further places to reach. And I think it won't just be Gold Coast Limited, hopefully. And I think once I manage being a mum and still swinging in, it's definitely on the cards that hopefully, you know, one day you'll see our faces down there and that we've got more to offer for sure.
Well, I'm sure that will make a lot of people very happy. Chloe, we've loved having you on Deep in the Weeds today to hear your story. Please keep in touch and we'll catch up again soon.
Will do. Thank you so much. Lovely to chat to you.
This is the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. Stay tuned as we take a deep dive into the lives of the incredible people who ply their trade in the food and hospitality sector.
Special thanks to executive producer Rob Locke for making this all happen.
Follow us on Instagram at Deep in the Weeds Podcast or email us at podcast@deepintheweeds.com.au.
Stay safe and be well.